Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their expertise, and their insights to help you grow your business. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and founder of The Authority Engine, where we help tech businesses turn conversations into clients and expertise into pipelines. And on this show, that's exactly what we do. I interview people who are doing just that. Leaders who are scaling smart, building influence, and creating impact in their industry. So without further ado, let's just dive straight into this episode. I've been looking forward to this episode for a very long time now. So Rob, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what is it that you actually do?
Gary, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah. So, I know we had this conversation before, but my background's a little circuitous. So yes, I run a company now that's focused on tech and analytics, but I started off life as a historian, modern European history, which in the UK actually stretches from about the 7th century to just before, just before World War II. So basically, I was on a fast track for unemployment for a number of years. And my parents were very happy when I ran the business club at the university. And one thing led to another. And I ended up working for a company called McKinsey. Knew nothing about what they really did, but it helped me get my foot in the door, basically. And so my life has been one of starting in consultancy, learning a little bit about all these things that, you know, I wouldn't have even imagined anything about when I was a student or even really cared about when I was a student. Yeah. And I did a couple startups too. I had to do that. They didn't make me a billionaire, but I managed to sell one just in time back in the day. And that gave me a taste for not only working, with large established organizations, but also building things, which is what I love to do. So my background has been more punctuated by doors open, walk through them strategy than this vast plan that some people think people are successful have.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, Rob, isn't it? People tend to think that all careers, to a degree, is very much a very straight line, whether it goes from start to here, and there's a couple of little turns, but ultimately we're on the path, especially when they see successful people. But we all know that in careers and in businesses and entrepreneurship, that's just not the case at all. It's a big bowl of spaghetti, and you just got to fight your way through it until you get to one end. Looking back at your career, you've had such a remarkable path across McKinsey, Bloomberg, Accenture, startups, etc. Looking like now at Dig Human, what sparked the idea for Dig Human, and why did now seem like the best time to do it?
Well, I'd been spending about 10 years at Accenture after Bloomberg. My role was to build the social media practice and emerging channels as well. So they started lumping things in that were just not particularly social media, not just Facebook and Twitter at the time, but it was all kinds of things that people are using to communicate. And a lot of the work that I did wasn't just on helping organizations set these things up or find the right technology or platform. We did all that. A lot of the time it was like answering a simple question that more often than not got asked when I walked in the door, which is, I've got all this stuff, I'm doing all this stuff, but how do I get value out of all this stuff? And that could be true not just of the social media stuff that I worked on, but also, marketing automation, digital transformation, all this wonderful. You're spending hundreds of millions. Some of these organizations spend hundreds of millions of dollars doing it. And I think halfway along my journey, I kind of started talking with some of my colleagues about these ideas that, is it the technology? Is it the data? Is it this, the promise of AI that's going to somehow make our lives all better, make these clients' lives better at least? Or is there something missing in this equation? And the more I thought about it, the more I took a step back and put actually my historian's cap back on, which sounds strange, but it was more to do with, what do I know about humanity over centuries that, is maybe the four or five basic things that never change but often get overlooked, that make a difference about propelling something forward, whether that's, the Industrial Revolution or whatever. And what are the things that you really need to do to be successful in all of this? And what are the missing components? And that was the genesis for the idea of Dig, which was about, I think it was 6 or 7 years into my stint at Accenture, I got totally random request from a publisher, Wiley, to write a book. At the time, I think they wanted me to write a dummies book. And it sounds really great. I think I could make money doing that, but I don't think Accenture would like me to do a dummies book. And so we hemmed and hawed and we put it off on the shelf. And then it came back a couple of years later. And they said, well, if you could do any book you wanted to do, how about that? And so I didn't have it. I'm kind of on my bucket list to write a book, but I thought, you know, I've had all this stuff I keep chirping on about, can I put pen to paper and focus on the things I think are missing in this whole equation? And the basic thing I think I boiled it down to was this idea of, what are we doing it all for? If we're not, you know, if we're building these amazing companies based on technology and data and all this stuff, and if we're not doing it for humanity, what are we doing it for? If we're not trying to make people's lives better, what are we doing it for? Even if you just boil it down to a commerce question, which is, if I want to grow my business, if I don't care about my customers, are they going to care about me? Do I have much longevity? And you just see, you know, history is littered with, you know, people who miss that equation at some point. It's not just the technology that moves on. It's just the fact that you don't actually know your customers anymore.
No, that's, yeah. And this is the key thing. We've talked about this before. We'll dive in a little bit more into it as we go through today. But we now live in a world, you know, that is just a sheer lack of trust wherever you look. It's almost like we're inbuilt to be distrustful before being trusting. So we're going to delve into that a little bit and your thoughts on that a little bit later. But yeah, for those who don't know what Dig Human does, can you explain to us what problem does Dig Human solve and who are your ideal clients?
So I guess we solve two parts of a similar equation. So one part is that one I mentioned before, which is how do enterprise businesses, more enterprise than maybe small and medium sized, but the rules apply. How do you make smart investments and get value out of those investments? And part of that is understanding the customer better. Mm-hmm. So what we help clients do is really understand customers better in this day and age, not the old day and age of the 20th century, where market research, you could spend, you know, months figuring out what your customers are thinking, and then, you know, launch your new product or your new campaign, and you should be, you know, be reasonably assured that it was going to be successful. This day and age, that doesn't apply. That model has been blown up. And so time is of the essence, and using data that, you know, that's floating around out there, I kind of call it, so data with a sell by date, and using that and more effectively in a way that doesn't violate that trust factor. In our thesis, we believe that that helps you take full advantage of the investments you're making, you know, whether that's marketing automation or email marketing or whatever it may be, or full blown machine learning and AI. It's like, people don't take the step back first before implementing all this stuff. And so that's what we help them do. Take a step back. What are your customers really saying here and now? Not through the windscreen, not through the rearview mirror. So that's what we're trying to do, is give companies a sense of what's ahead on the road so they can steer in the right direction. And the second part of that equation is making things better, making the experiences for customers better. And that's the point you brought up with trust. How do you boil it down, get the essence of trust. What does that even mean?
And then let's look at that, because this is something which, no doubt, those who are listening here or watching here, there'll be several nodding heads, you know, and even when I brought it up with you before, there's always a nodding head. And is that one of the biggest challenges that these founders that who are listening here or leaders within the tech is that the number one is a problem being heard above all the noise. But yeah, even with that, once they even get above the noise and manage to get a conversation with somebody, then again, they've got to break this wall of distrust that's automatically there. So what insights have you got on, Robert? And, you know, and how do people move forward with this?
I think there are a number of core principles, which oddly enough have governed us for centuries, but we always forget them. Number one is, as humans, we don't trust one another, right? You know, we've always been a little tribalistic. We, you know, it's taken centuries to figure out how to live together in close proximity. And the reason that we are able to do that is, one is, we have rules of the road. We write down things that we you know, our principles or our laws, and we stick to them, and we're genuine about it, right? As much as possible. And those that do that well, you start building trust, right? You know, I'm going to give you my service for this amount of money. If you're not happy, I will give you your money back. That's the most basic thing. Or I will make sure that I do the right thing by you. When we were a nation of shopkeepers, that was almost innate. If you were a good shopkeeper, you didn't have tons of customers. You didn't have thousands upon thousands. You had a customer base in a local geography, and you knew them very well. And maybe there were a few hundred, and you know, people would come into your shop. You also treated them in an authentic way if you were successful. You knew that Mrs. Smith had a son that was, you know, going to, another town, maybe to, you know, work in an accounting firm or something. You would ask stuff about them, right? And you would be genuine about it. And I said, in like, even in the book, I recount most of the book is just that I did in the end was all about stories that I had experienced, you know, in my family. And the one I always highlight as a way of building trust was that, if you remember, if you lived in Chicago, there was something called Marshall Field & Company, which is now Macy's. Back in the day, that was the place. That's where you went for everything. And it was a magical thing if you were a kid or a family. You would go there on holidays and you'd go to the Walnut Room and the, you know, the Easter Bunny, whatever it may be. One thing I remember as a kid is that Marshall Field had this amazing toy department. It was stretched the entire floor, which it no longer does. And the people who worked there, they worked there. They weren't transient. So, you know, they had been there for maybe 15, 20, 30 years. And I remember the one guy who was in the trains department, which my dad loved, had made friends with him before I was even born. And so when my dad brought me in, you know, he knew my dad. Even if it was tangential, he knew him and knew kind of what he liked. And he would say, "Hey, Walt, you know, how you doing? And glad to see you're bringing your son in. You know, who's this fellow? And what are you interested? Oh, you know what? I've got something for you that it's not even on the shelf yet, but I'm going to go get it because I think I put it aside for you because I thought you might come in." Now, what does that do? If you boil that essence down, it's you know your customer. You know them in the way that makes them feel genuinely like you know and care, right? You need that. I always say they need to know they matter in something to you. If you're a good salesperson, that's what first comes to the fore, that you're thoughtful, you've listened, you care. And then you start thinking about, how do I meet the needs of that customer in context? So this is like three principles already that we've gotten through, like understand the context. And so as we got, you know, if we go fast forward from like the 19th to the 20th, now 21st century, we got further and further away. We have thousands of customers, hundreds of thousands of customers. And then we started to get clever by half, right? Which is, how do I can't talk to all these people. I don't know these people, and my workforce is transient. So how am I going to intercept them with the right thing at the right time in the right way? Well, I guess data and analytics will and platforms will. Maybe AI will help me. Well, that's not the way it works. People are smarter than that. You and I, you must know, you've gone through these experiences yourself, like what you like and what you don't like, when you have a good experience, when you have a bad experience. And the problem is, we're using technology in a superficial way rather than thinking very thoughtfully. What is a good experience that I want to deliver to a customer, even if I just know three things about them? And that's the one thing I would say to anyone listening here. Forget the data, forget the analytics, forget, you know, McKinsey and everything. Next time you want to really understand, if you know your customers well so that you can build the right base for this, take a piece of paper, a post-it note, and write three things about that your most valuable customer. And here's the kicker, that your competitors probably don't know. And if you can't answer it, that's the problem. That's the kicker, which is, that's how you use technology and data to sort of figure out my best customers, what motivates them, what's important to them. And trust is the wrapper around which all of this stuff, you know, is secured. Because if you don't have trust, they're not going to tell you these things. If you try to take them from them, they're going to know that. And they're going to be capricious. Then you end up having a conversation about price. You could go to anyone. I got it for the least amount of money. Why don't you come to me?
Yeah. That's a very, there's so much to dissect there. So, yeah, I'm not going to design and go all the way back, but there's some that just really stand out about what you said there, Rob. It's almost like so if you don't know those three things, like you said, that about the customer that your competitor doesn't, then ultimately the opposite side to that is, you know what they do, you know what your competitor does, and if you know what your competitor does, you're going to sound exactly the same as your competitor, because there's no differentiator there. So if those who are listening or watching here are thinking, yes, I find it hard every single day to stand out and compete. But what are you actually doing? Ask yourself, what are you doing? Or what is it that you know that is different that they think? And this is something we used to say when we were doing sales training those years ago. We said, how are you different? And that your customer is not saying.
Right.
Because if you are saying exactly the same thing that makes you different, then again, you're no different.
I'm always in conversations, at least at the enterprise level. I think it's true small, medium-sized businesses too, because everybody needs or wants today, these days, technology and data, and there are many places to go get it. Just start. And, you know, it's hard to say, here's how my platform is better than so-and-so's platform. Usually it comes down to, it's easier to use and it's cheaper. Or something like that. But I think where you see the attrition with a lot of the partners that I've worked with in the past has always been that value question, which is, I've spent maybe millions, if not hundreds of thousands. And someone taps me on the shoulder and says, well, what did you get out of that? What was the dollar return? You spent a dollar, did you get 10 back? And usually people can't answer that. And so that's when you start getting into, well, maybe we should look at another platform. And it lasts usually about anywhere from 18 to 24 months. That's usually the cycle. Yeah. If you're a software provider to a small and medium-sized business, or even an enterprise business, you probably got maybe a year and a half to somehow distinguish your platform or get it embedded so deeply that people are afraid to take it out. But I think the flip side of that is where people have broken the cycle and said, hey, you know, I'm going to provide a value add here, which is I'm going to all the way along, right from the beginning, make sure that I've listened to the client in some fashion. Listen between the lines. I almost like if you're a musician, I always think it's the black keys that are most interesting than the minor keys. Though that's where the sort of golden nuggets of what's different about the needs of a customer are, the contextual needs. And if you've listened to that carefully, then you can actually start thinking about how do I provide that value add on top of the platform I've created? How do I provide that value on top of the software I offer? Or how do I provide that value add on top of the widget I've created for this market? And it sticks to that, becomes your brand because you're providing something. And usually it's the so what or the now what or the thing that helps someone solve the problem they actually have versus, yeah, here, you know, I'm selling you this thing. It will do all these amazing things, but you're on your own after that. Right. And let's face it, we always feel like we're on our own. And that's what makes things, you know, hard to say, I don't trust you because you're just trying to sell me something.
Yeah. And again, it's such a fascinating point when you look at that I'm sitting here listening to you, Rob, and trying to put my feet in a typical listener or a typical tech firm that would think, well, I do listen. But it's almost like what you, again, if they missed what you said, I'm going to repeat this, it's listening and then doing a value add, not listening to say, how does he fit into my product? How does my product fit into this? That bit is almost a given that if you've got a good enough product or good enough service, that's the given. It's the value add that you're listening for. And it's that value add that you put on top that helps a client, which builds the trust.
Make it even simpler, which is how do we make friends or build relationships? I lay odds it's not the formula that is the standard formula. I talk to you, you talk to me, we have common interests. Well, why don't we get married? It's the value add. It's there's something about this person that I really want to have them in my life. I like talking to them. They make me feel good. They listen to me, you know, and when that falls apart, then, you know, we kind of go our separate ways. That's the most basic human instinct is figuring out, because we are social creatures, how do we build trust with one another in a way that is meaningful, has value add to that relationship? And it's true for those personal relationships. It's still true for your business relationships, anything that you sell. And I think in this day and age, with things, as you pointed out, being so fractured and frenetic and uncertain, people are looking for a port in the storm. They're looking for something that's stable, that's comforting, that says, you know, I stand for this or I do this and you're not going to go wrong with me. I'm going to be right down the center every time. You know, you need something? I got it. I got you covered. You know, I held something back because I thought about you the other day. You know, who does that? We have the ability to do that now at scale because we actually have these technologies. We're not using them the right way. That's all.
Exactly. And that's, again, what a great way to look at it. It says that the technology is there to help us do it, but we're not doing it. We're looking at technology to do something different as opposed to go back to what's true. And if you think, go back to Maslow's hierarchy, certainty, the people's need for certainty is such at a basic level, is so important that we are just not giving the certainty out. And therefore the trust won't be there if we're not giving certainty.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not expensive sometimes to do these things. I mean, I could give you loads of examples of large companies who have done little things that make a difference, you know, and they transcend $1 million, $100 million marketing campaigns, whatever, because they're so genuine. And I use an example, another Chicago example is a story. I think there's a restaurant called Gibson's in Chicago. You may have been to it if you've ever been to Chicago. It is the place for, I don't know, a certain demographic. It's not really young people place necessarily, but it has a wide variety in demographics and people go there and it's always packed.
And you can debate whether you like the food or you don't like the food, whatever, but it's always packed and there's usually a wait. And this one story was told to me by someone who actually ended up investing in it. They said, you know, look, I heard this story. This is why I invested it in the first place, which was, you know, there was a loyal customer that, you know, was a businessman who spent thousands of dollars at Gibson's every time he was in town. He'd take, you know, his clients to Gibson's and they'd have a great time and, you know, he just loved it. And this one time he flew in with some clients. They went to Gibson's. They didn't have a reservation. And they made that mistake because they just thought, oh, you know, let's grab something before we go and get a flight. And so they went in and the maitre d' said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, we don't have any room. But if you wait at the bar for, you know, next 25, 30 minutes, I will try to get you seated. And we're like, okay, that doesn't sound too bad. We'll do that. We'll get a drink, blah, blah, blah. Well, 30 minutes turned into 45 and 45 turned into an hour. And then finally, you know, the guy goes up, said, are we any closer? And he said, you know, sir, I'm not sure that I can do it anytime soon. And he said, well, that's okay. You know what? We're going to have to catch a flight, but we'll just go across the street and grab something there real quick. And don't worry about it. Next time we'll catch up with you. And he goes out the door. The long story short for this one was that the owner, Hugo is his name, who also owns Hugo's Frog Bar next door. And I have no stock in either company. He was going out the door at the same time this coming in the door at the same time as customers going out. And he's like, you know, very happy to see them. He said, all right, did you have a meal? Was it good? He said, no, I didn't have time. Told the whole story and said, you know, we just have to go across the street. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. And he left with his entourage. What Hugo did was he went to one of the servers and gave that server an American Express, his American Express card, and told them to follow that group out the door. Whatever they're going to buy, you pay for it. End of story. And what did that teach us? Well, it's a story that's been repeated probably hundreds, if not thousands of times here in Chicago, at least around that area and that group. It's an amazing story in the sense that it was not a huge amount of money to spend. Maybe it was $400 or something. But how do you buy marketing at that price that has as much word of mouth value? And that's the stuff that people look for in an age when everybody feels they don't matter to one another. They're desperate to feel like they matter. I'm desperate to feel like I matter day in, day out. So how do you make that happen? And it doesn't mean that you do it for everybody all the time. It's, you know, but it does mean that you use information that you glean, the relationships you build smartly so that you can market, so that you can connect with people in a way that's meaningful to them, so that you're ready when they have a contextual need. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that makes, again, what a great way of looking at it. And I said, yeah, that story's been told so many times. And yeah, anybody around the Chicago area would know that, who has ever been in business in Chicago would definitely know that story. But we talked a lot about building relationships. There's going to be people listening here, and I can just already hear them. I said, well, that's fine. I'm really good at building relationships, but I find it really hard in generating interest. You know, I can't build the relationship until I've generated interest. What insights have you got for us on that place?
Well, so interest is also, it's not an immediate thing. It's a slow burn, right? You generate interest over time because you're able to connect with people in a meaningful way around the things that you know they're interested in. But it is a drip drip. It's not instantaneous. And so I'll give you another example. When I was at Bloomberg, my first week at Bloomberg, I was set up to start the social media practice, but the social media operational group there for everybody. Like they didn't have any, they wouldn't allow it. And, you know, in an environment where you weren't allowed to do any of these things, you can imagine there were some people who did things. Didn't tell anyone. And I remember like the first week I was there, I got a call from someone off of LinkedIn. I mean, how does that even happen? Who said, hey, you know, I love Bloomberg. I love the terminal. We love the information that you provide. And you've got guys in my quant group, quant finance group on LinkedIn who come in and they never participate in a way that I feel is useful. And I said, what do you mean? I said, well, they come in, these guys from Bloomberg, and they just talk about the next event that they're sponsoring or a new product that they have. And they said, the whole point of my group is to talk about real issues that people on Wall Street have, thoughts and ideas, and we exchange them freely. Well, you know, different firms, different people, different walks of life. And every time someone on the Bloomberg side is there, they just say, oh, and by the way, we have an event you can come to. I'm like, okay, fast forward. What I ended up doing is saying, all right, to their point is developing interest takes time. It's the same thing, like, as I said before, in terms of building a relationship. You know, I don't know many people, maybe there are, who the first time they meet someone go, I'm going to marry that person. Now, you hear about it in the movies, but I think there's more to it than that. Yeah. You know, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. I think what you have is you develop interest. You see each other, you talk, you laugh, you whatever. But you do it in context. You don't talk about getting married the first time you go out on a date. You talk about other things that you're interested in and things that movies you may have seen and all that kind of stuff. But you talk about what people are interested in, and that's how you develop interest. It sounds you know, very straightforward, but it's hard, right? So you had to do in that case is we had to sort of say, well, what is the conversation? Listen first. That's what I go back
to. Yeah, I love the way you keep coming back to it. It's just you listen. Just listen to what people are saying there. Oh, so let me ask you, Rob, in a world where tech is everywhere and trust is rare, right? Tech's everywhere, trust is rare. How do you personally aim to stand out as a leader?
Yeah, well, I mean, doing things like this, for sure. Talking with people. I spend a lot more time. One thing I've spent or learned over time is, you know, we talk about networking and it's used as a throwaway. I think sometimes people force their networking. Like, I got to network. Okay, well, what are you going to do? I'm going to build a list of people I want to network with. And I'm going to network with them at this place and this place, and then I'm going to do some more networking. Like, what I mean by networking is, like, who do I know is interested in something or might know somebody who has struggling with a problem? I'm happy to help them for free. You know, I'm like, just to talk. And so what you gradually do is you sort of figure out, you know, right, they're groups that are interested in what I'm doing. You know, I don't have any motivation, a hidden agenda. I just like to help people. I hope that comes across. And as a result of that, people do pick up the phone and they call me when they have a problem because it's the context. And so, you know, I try to help people. When I said my second job was another consulting firm, one of the things that we did is we always helped clients if they wanted to go someplace else. You know, we weren't like go to LinkedIn or whatever. We just like, you know what, I know someone at Unilever who needs this sort of thing and you're kind of bored with P&L. Well, why don't I introduce you and whatever happens, happens. It's not what we're trying to do anything. But this idea of, you know, begetting or to help people genuinely because you just want to help them. Sometimes the smallest thing can actually turn into, you know, someone picking up the phone when they get that into that role and go, you know, I really liked what you said when I met you the other day or the other year. And this might be interesting to you. You know, what do you think about that? And why don't you come and talk? So that's how, you know, like when I think about that networking thing, that I think, again, it's being genuine. And, you know, I think when we started this whole thing, thought, oh, we're not going to do this on our own. We can't just put a shingle out and tell people, hey, we're going to help people with, you know, human-centered experiences. But what we did do is think about who are the people that we've worked with that, you know, actually may have a need. We've been in touch with them and can we partner with them in some fashion and bring something to the table maybe they don't have, make them look good, hopefully add value to whatever they're offering, whether it's software or data or services or whatever, and piggyback to a certain degree so that we can go, you know, the alternative is you could go to a, you know, do a beauty contest with a VC or a private equity group and, you know, get a wadge of cash and then, you know, blow through it and hopefully something comes out of it that's revenue related. But a lot of like, that's not how it works. It's like, those are the betting shops, right? You know, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to build something over time that you're kind of proud of, I think it's the good old fashioned hard slog.
So yeah, you know, when we've talked before, I know how partnerships, building authority, all of those things are important to you. When it comes to growth for you, growth for Dick Human in the next sort of 12 to 24 months, what type of things are you exploring? Are you exploring things like content, more partnerships, podcasting, thought leadership? What feels more relevant and exciting to you now?
Yeah, well, all the above. But I think to highlight a couple, I think one is certainly thought leadership, because I think that's the key. That's our differentiator, which is trying to change the questions, if not the answers.
Yes.
And that I think stands us in good stead for sure. So we'd like to do more of that. It's not always easy. But with partners, you can sometimes get some leverage to do those sorts of things and, you know, you can co-invest in them. So that's what we're doing. I think also the thing that we think is important is that, you know, we started and we know our own weaknesses and flaws. You know, consulting is not an easy thing. It's not something that we always want to keep doing until our, you know, until we're octogenarians, but we have to. But I think when we said we're not going to do that, we're not going to go, you know, a VC or a private equity group right now. We're going to build this. We're going to self-fund. You know, we're using our skill sets to hopefully, you know, generate revenue out of the gate. But we're also taking some of that and investing it, both the intellectual capital and financial
capital in things that are more data-driven and licensable and hopefully will change the game in a bigger way. I was just doing it slightly circuitous route, but that's how we're thinking about these things, which is, and we're also, again, leveraging partners and friends and whatever else we can to help us refine those things so that we're not doing it in a vacuum. Hopefully that answers part of the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's making sure that, I love what you just said there about, you know, if we can't change the answers, at least change the questions. And sometimes just getting people to think about things in a slightly different way. So, that can really knock someone into a different trajectory for the better. By thinking about things in a different way.
Well, that's what people are crying out for right now. We've heard it all before. We know how disappointed things get. And so that cynicism is just feeding itself across the board. And that's true of, you know, everything that's happening in the world today is everything that's happening, you know, is mirrored in the commercial world. And so we're letting cynicism rule the day. And there was a time where, you know, like I was definitely Don Quixote when it came to social media. I'm like, oh, this is great. It's going to be very democratizing. We're going to be, you know, it'll be able to listen to our client, our customers and use, you know, what they're telling us to make their lives better. And it doesn't quite work out that way, right? You have to have a plan if you're going to do that sort of thing. Yeah. And if you don't, you get caught up in the day to day. I just need to, you know, I need to generate revenue or whatever it may be. The very thing that is the most important in this equation, the very thing, which is the human element of it, is lost. And if the answer is you just don't want any humans in the future, okay, well, that's a different way. We can debate that later. But I don't think we're planning to go away. And I think, you know, we've got, you know, the concept of the 20th century concept of a customer. And I think that has to change because it's just not going to sustain us going. You need to think more of like, I have a community and I'm building things for that community. I'm generating wealth, generating jobs. I'm generating goodwill, and I'm generating useful things that people use. I don't want to screw that up, right? I want to be genuine all the way through. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if that pivot really occurs. And you know, we're doing our little bit to try to, you know, we're patting ourselves on the back for having like transformed the world. But our whole principle here, or the reason for being, is to try to make it a little bit better for people and understand that it's each of us and all of us when we come together to do that. It's not just one entrepreneur or one company or, you know, whatever. It's all of us together kind of working in concert and also being open why we're doing this. We want to make money. Yes, we want to do it right, the right way. And we want to make sure that we're providing value to you and we care about what you think. So
there's always a meaningful air about that, Rob. There's the whole thing about being meaningful. Yes, you're being honest. Yes, transparency. Yes, we want to make money. Yes, we want to grow. But it's done in a meaningful way that there's a good hearty meaning behind it, which is lovely. But Rob, I can't believe time is upon us and, you know, it's gone so quickly. I think definitely you and I should have a part two because we can just keep on talking for such a long time. If people wanted to get hold of you, potentially work with you, what's the best way of doing that?
Well, usually you can find me on LinkedIn. You can look up the book on Amazon, Human Driven Experience and the Battle for Trust in the Digital Age. Let's get that plug in there for Wiley. I have to. But you can or reach out to you or however you want to do it. I am on social, but I, you know, people tend not to use LinkedIn is probably the best way to find me in many ways. And, you know, I can give you my email address too. That's
make sure the LinkedIn, your LinkedIn link is in the show notes. So people can just click on that, come straight to you, and I'll get the link for the book as well and put that into the show notes so that people can have that. Rob, all that leads me to say is thank you very much for your insights today. Thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today.
Thank you, Gary, for having me.
It's been great. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per usual, if you have taken one insight or 10 insights, make sure you like and comment at the bottom so others can see what you've liked that potentially can help them. But more importantly, make sure you share. Once you share, then we all grow together. Rob has given some great insights there. And just share it out to other people who you may think that would be helpful as well as the other leaders we've had on our podcast show. So until next time, keep striving. More importantly, keep being profitable, and we shall see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.